The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan
on News Talk.
Welcome back. Owen O'Brien, Sinn Féin TD for Dublin Midwest and spokesperson on housing, standing in, as I've been saying repeatedly throughout the last 2 hours, for Kieran Cuddihy. Of course, I keep saying standing, I'm sitting in, if that's a more appropriate phrase, but however, I'm here. In the last hour of the show, we will be asking the question, what is heat therapy? And is there any scientific evidence to demonstrate that it will make you live longer? We're also going to have a great section at the end, talking to some of the new emerging outstanding musicians that are getting a new lease of life now that post-COVID, the festival season is back on. And we may even have time for some callers. But before we do all of that, I want to return turn to the very serious subject of the US killing of the leader of Al-Qaeda late on Sunday in a drone strike in Afghanistan. President Joe Biden said Ayman al-Zawahiri was killed in a counter-terrorism operation carried out by the CIA in Kabul. He and Osama bin Laden plotted the 9/11 attacks together, and he was on America's most wanted list. For more on this, I'm joined by author of The New Threat, The Past, Present and Future of Islamic Militancy, Jason Burke, who's also the Africa Affairs correspondent for The Guardian. Welcome, Jason. First of all, your reaction to the killing on Sunday?
It was something that was always going to happen. It was a question of, you know, when rather than if. I was surprised that it was in Kabul, actually in the city. In retrospect, I probably shouldn't have been. I thought that Zawahiri would be killed elsewhere. And then I immediately started thinking, how much difference is this going to make, given how sick he's been. For those in the business kind of watching Al-Qaeda, there have been a whole series of scares that Zawahiri was dead over the last 2 or 3 years, and there's been a constant to and fro among experts and intelligence people saying, is he alive, is he dead, and he keeps resurfacing alive. This time, I think he's definitively dead. So that takes us into a new phase for Al-Qaeda.
And we'll come to that in a moment. But you make the point in your column in The Guardian that he was elderly, he was sick. What's the logic of this drone strike killing at this point in time from a US point of view?
Well, I think what they call decapitation, so that's taking out the leadership, the head of terrorist organisations, is a useful and necessary strategy for any counter-terrorist effort. It's disruptive at the very least. It forces organisations that are hostile to concentrate on their own succession, internal politics and so forth, rather than plotting attacks against their enemies. So there's a simple practical utility to it. But there's also obviously an enormous emotional element, especially with the US. The people are saying that al-Zawahiri was deeply involved in the plotting of the 9/11 attacks. He wasn't, actually, but nonetheless, he was very much a partner of Osama bin Laden, who obviously oversaw that attack and many others against US interests. And to have hunted him down, Zawahiri, and eliminated him, having also eliminated bin Laden 11 years ago, is, I think, something that is going to be deeply satisfying to the American public, to American politicians, and to the American security establishment.
And from their point of view, I mean, how much of a threat is Al-Qaeda at this point in time, whether in Afghanistan and stability there, the wider region, or indeed for the US?
Well, it breaks down like this in a way. The Al-Qaeda is not really a threat directly to the US or to Western Europe at the moment. It hasn't really made a concerted effort to attack what the Al-Qaeda strategists have called the far enemy for many, many years now, over a decade. It's been focused on what they call the near enemy, and that's local regimes in the Middle East and the greater Islamic world. And they've made a lot of progress there. I've had some setbacks in Iraq and Syria, but in sub-Saharan Africa, they've made progress. In South Asia, they've made progress, and in some places elsewhere. So it's a mixed overall picture for them, but not a bad one. And the point here is that because they have a presence in various places around the world, in unstable conflict, conflicted zones, They could, if they wanted to, use those areas as a platform, as a launch pad for attacks into the West. Whether those attacks would be successful or not is another matter, but they could have a go. They haven't done, because Ayman al-Zawahiri decided not to. He wanted to focus on other priorities for the organisation. But that doesn't mean that any successor might change his mind and follow that particular path and launch attacks into the US, or certainly at US interests or Western European interests or such like.
And for analysts like yourself, who obviously have been watching this much more closely than the general public, who are those likely successors? And could one of the consequences of this drone strike actually result in an increased level of threat, particularly to the far enemy, as you called it, or increased activity within the region itself?
In the short term, I think we'll see less activity while Al-Qaeda sort themselves out. But then they'll want to make a point. And as you say, we don't know what a successor might do in terms of strategy. The favourite, if you like, among the possible candidates is a man called Saif al-Adl, or known as Saif al-Adl, actually. It's not his real name, but he's a 60-year-old Egyptian. A veteran of Al-Qaeda, been involved in a whole series of attacks over 20, 30 years. He is the most obvious choice, except that he's in Iran, we think, and his movements are pretty closely controlled. So that would be a difficult choice for them. Otherwise, there's nobody else who's really got his kind of seniority. And there, several of them of the kind of candidates are in places like the Sahel or in Somalia. And that would be a really major shift for Al-Qaeda to be trying to base their leadership out of what were once seen as very peripheral areas. So there's going to be a lot of change. It's unpredictable. It could certainly result in an enhanced threat to the West, but we simply don't know yet. And it'll take months, possibly years, to find out.
And tell me this then, because obviously the Taliban took over in Afghanistan only about a year or so ago. What are the implications for this kind of drone strike, both for US's obviously very strained relationship with the Taliban, but also the future of that regime itself?
Well, it's quite embarrassing for the Taliban, whichever way they cut it, because I mean, they're online, some of the chatter from the Islamists is saying that it was the Taliban who betrayed al-Zawahiri to the Americans. Meanwhile, Washington and its allies are saying, look, this shows, or at least implying that this shows that the Taliban are completely untrustworthy and aren't adhering to the spirit, if not the letter, of the Doha Agreement, by which they were meant to restrict the activities or indeed forbid anybody being based in Afghanistan who would be threatening or attacking US interests. So either way, they come out of it pretty badly. Regionally, I don't think it's going to have a huge impact at kind of the geopolitical level. The interests around Afghanistan, in Afghanistan, are those of major and indeed minor states who are all jockeying for advantage one way or another, maneuvering around the country or in the country. And the death of one, albeit senior, terrorist is unlikely to change that. However, what would is if Al-Qaeda did shift strategies and pulled off a major attack in a regional capital or indeed a Western capital, and that would mean that all bets are off.
So in some senses, would this be more a closure from the US point of view on 9/11 than any serious strategic intervention into what Al-Qaeda is likely to do in the aftermath of this drone strike?
I think it is, to a certain extent, certainly now, that's what it feels like. But we'll have a much better idea when we see who is the successor to al-Zawahiri and what their strategic choices are. I mean, at the moment, it feels more like a full stop than the start of something new, certainly.
And then one final question, Jason, before we wrap up. Obviously, because it's a very high-profile killing by the US, it's in the media, but how prevalent are these drone strikes in the last year or 2 years? Is this an isolated incident, or have there been others that have been less reported?
This is the first major target that's been hit in Afghanistan for about 11 months, I think, and that's a long time, certainly given the intensity of drone strikes elsewhere in previous periods. That said, I mean, it does demonstrate the continued capabilities of the US even after the withdrawal from Afghanistan. I spoke to a CIA contact, now retired, recently retired, last year at the time of the US chaotic withdrawal from Afghanistan, who said that, listen, you know, it's going to be tougher getting into Afghanistan and finding people and killing them if we want to, but we can do it and we will do it. And he was absolutely right. So I think, you know, this has been a capability that the Americans have been honing, have spent an enormous amount of money on over 20 years now, even more, and it is still very effective. So the war on terror is over, but the contest between terrorism and the counter-terrorists still continues.
Jason Burke, Africa correspondent for The Guardian and author of A New Threat, The Past, Present and Future of Islamic Militancy. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Now, a number of texts have continued to come in on the issue of landlords or small landlords and the homelessness crisis. Stephen in Wicklow says, I know several landlords and the reason they are sold up is the prospect of Sinn Féin being in government. And Alex has said, how come small landlords are never asked how to solve the housing crisis? They are only people providing accommodation, yet are demonised into leaving an overregulated, unprofitable market with 52% taxation rate. Well, Stephen, just to say, landlords have been leaving the market for 4 years. Figures from the Residential Tenancies Board have shown quarter on quarter since 2017, accidental and semi-professional landlords are leaving. For the accidentals, they're people who never wanted to be landlords. They're leaving because positive equity has returned to the market. But also for a lot of the accidentals, they always intended to sell at some point in time, I suppose, as a contribution to their pension pot, and house prices are so high. So I have to say, while there are many aspects of the government's policy that you could rightly blame, I don't think the possibility of a future Sinn Féin government is the cause. And to Alex, in fact, landlords are regularly asked. The Irish Property Owners Organisation and the Irish Property and Valuers Association published very detailed research on this issue. I think I was the only politician that sat through the entire presentation, and I've met the sponsoring organisations of the research afterwards, and in fact the Oireachtas Housing Committee is doing a session on this very matter, and we'll hear from landlords and tenant organisations as well as independent bodies, and that should be in September or early October. So next, coming up, Claire McKenna will be explaining to me what heat therapies are and if they elongate your life.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.